Welcome to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and passion for dinosaurs can lead many places. It can lead to a love of science, critical thinking, and unique storytelling. And Darren Paniak takes us down this path of using dinosaurs as a catalyst for critical thinking. And he joins me now from our Black Hills studios. Darren Paniak, thanks so much for being on Innovation today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you are the featured speaker this month at the Steam Cafe next Tuesday night at 6 Mountain Time at the Hay Camp Brewing Company in downtown Rapid City. And dinosaurs, a catalyst for critical thought, is the topic for that as well. So let's dive in. Let's start by laying the foundation for where this idea came from, mostly from a class that you teach about dinosaurs.
Yeah, I've been teaching a class on dinosaurs at the School of Mines since 2010. And several years ago, I was teaching a course. I was teaching a section on these dome-skulled dinosaurs called pachycephalosaurs. They're very common in the northwest part of the state. And it's been suggested that these small dinosaurs with these huge, thickened skulls ran at each other and butted their heads like modern bighorn sheep or ibex. And there's always been some question as to the validity of this idea. So I had the students do sort of a mock sort of debate, examine both sides of this issue. Were they butting heads? Were they not? And the logical conclusion they came to was that for several reasons, both engineering standpoints and the feasibility of this behavior, it probably didn't happen. But this actually seemed to upset some of the students for some reason. And so I asked them why, and they said, well, we grew up with this image. We love this image of these dinosaurs running full tilt, butting heads, and we don't really want to let go of it. And so this is when I realized that these students were acting on an emotional appeal. They were acting on feelings of nostalgia and familiarity with this very neat image. And this was affecting their ability to accept the logic of this particular scenario. And so this was when I decided, you know what, I can use this in a broader context to teach some of these critical thought skills. And it all came from, you know, students getting worked up over childhood images of these animals.
Well, that world in your imagination can define what you believe as truth, yes?
Absolutely, yes. It most certainly can, and in many cases it does.
And then how do you, as a college professor, move them away from that to look at fact-based science?
I engage in a number of different vectors for trying to motivate these students to think in a more sort of logical fashion. One of the big tools I use is the use of logical fallacies. And so we will utilize logical fallacies such as a big one is conflating correlation with causation. And of course, one of the big correlation versus causation issues that we've dealt with in the past decades is the correlation between vaccines and autism. And so we now know that the paper that originally suggested that correlation was felonious. It did not have accurate data. But even before we knew that, there was some question, well, yes, there does seem to be a correlation between vaccines and autism, but we don't know if one is causing the other. And so I introduced this concept by talking to the students about the extinction of the dinosaurs. And we are fairly certain that the extinction of the dinosaurs had something to do with a large meteor comet impact at the end of the Cretaceous. But one of the problems with extinction in paleontology is that it's very difficult to show a direct causal relationship between an event and an extinction. All we can really do is show that these two things happened at the same time. Giant rock hits the earth. Coincidentally, the dinosaurs go extinct. Was this truly a cause and effect relationship? Well, it's kind of tough for us as paleontologists to really pin that down. And so this introduces that logical fallacy in a dinosaur-centric scenario. And then I go on and introduce, well, here's where this appears in your daily life. Here is where this happens, where you will encounter it on a day-to-day basis. So that's one of the tools that I use.
And then are you able to then have the conversations about how you apply that critical thinking to your daily life?
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, that's one of the things that I'm very, very passionate and adamant about. A lot of times students think that this is the result of, this is going to be applied to political issues. And in many respects, it certainly is. But I'm much more interested in giving students the critical thought tools to assess what their mechanic is telling them, what the plumber is telling them, their choice of news media, what they're seeing on Facebook, on social media. I'm much more concerned that they're thinking critically about those subjects. And they seem to be pretty open and accepting to these lessons.
And then how do you take, not every issue going on in your life really has a scientific fact that you can go and research, does it?
No, not at all. That is sort of the gap between what I'm trying to instill in this class and what these students encounter in their daily lives. I'm trying to give these students the tools to address issues that are not necessarily emotional issues or not necessarily even strictly moral or ethical issues. I'm basically trying to give these students a set of critical thought tools to evaluate information that they're presented with. And if there is a logical solution to the problem or the issue that they see at hand, I want them to have the tools to be able to come to a sound conclusion.
And there are many different tools and many different paths you can take in critical thinking depending on the topic?
Yes, there are. And of course, critical thinking is a very, very complex subject when it comes to pedagogy and mm-hmm. the psychology of critical thinking and that sort of thing. But ultimately, what it boils down to is the way I like to describe critical thinking comes from a book by Carl Sagan in 1995. It's called Demon Haunted World. And he basically simplifies critical thinking as the art of baloney detection. And so he talks about how critical thinking is the skills that are required to critically evaluate information and claims. And so basically, are you being delivered bunk or is this coming from a place of truth?
It seems so appropriate in today's claims of fake news and that kind of thing. And do you think in overall terms that these skills would benefit all of us?
Absolutely. I cannot stress enough that these critical thought skills would benefit all of us. And part of the reason I'm doing this is because on a day-to-day basis, I deal with a lot of eager young students who want to be paleontologists. Unfortunately, the reality is there's just not enough jobs out there in paleontology for all these students to realize that goal. So if I'm to sleep at night, I want to know that I'm giving these students something more than just a cast of characters of Jurassic Cretaceous animals that they can take with them. I want to know that I'm giving something that will benefit them no matter where they end up, be it as a career in paleontology, geology, or whatever.
So you have these students who are very excited about a topic like dinosaurs, and you're teaching them these critical thinking skills. Do you follow these students as they go on to other classes to see if it's working?
Sometimes I do. I don't necessarily actively follow them, but a lot of times I get feedback. Mm-hmm. I get feedback from the students later on saying, what you showed us in that class has really sort of come in handy, either in future classes where they apply these skills, or the ones that are most satisfying for me are when they say, I read this article online and it seemed to be legitimate, but then I looked at the source, the website, and I realized, well, this is probably not a reliable source for this information, so I have to question it. So yeah, sometimes I get direct feedback from students later on.
So sometimes, though, these students find their passion from movies, right, about dinosaurs. And those movies aren't always true or factual?
Yeah, I can't tell you the effect that a certain movie franchise has had on interest in paleontology. And one of the things that we as paleontologists are a bit more concerned with is not necessarily the inaccuracies in this movie, in these movies, with regard to how dinosaurs are portrayed. It's more, what we're more concerned about is how science might be misrepresented, or how these movies may misrepresent the type of information that we can get from the fossil record. And that's oftentimes the disconnect that I, as a educator, have to sort of connect. I have to show these students that, well, not only is the portrayal of dinosaurs in these movies maybe not entirely accurate, but the actual nature of science is not entirely accurate at all. And we have to get you on the right track to being a scientist and conducting science in the appropriate way.
So as a journalist and a storyteller, I always look for that great story, but you're saying that sometimes framing history and science in a storytelling way doesn't always do the best service.
That may be a bit
Did I stretch it too far?
You may have stretched it a little. I'm actually of the opinion that as scientists, we should actually employ storytelling a bit more, simply because when I'm teaching science, I generally use what's called a paradigmatic approach, which means I give a example that can then be applied to multiple situations. I introduce a principle or a concept, and then the students apply that to multiple situations. The problem with this paradigmatic approach is often it's not very entertaining.
Right.
It's kind of boring.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's why you need that good story.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep. And so if scientists are going to make any sort of inroads and impact with the general public, we need to find a way to tell the stories that we're engaging in. And the way to do that may not necessarily be to give this dinosaur a name and anthropomorphize it in this documentary, but it may be more to tell the story of how this dinosaur was discovered. How did our knowledge about this animal has changed over time? How are we figuring out what we know about this dinosaur today versus 100, 150 years ago? Those are really compelling stories about how science is actually conducted.
I just saw a brief little synopsis in your paper that I read, the moral dilemma surrounding Sue. And I'm just wondering in just a minute or so if you could talk a little bit about how you incorporate, you know, the moral side and the ethical side of science.
One of the things that I'm doing, I don't generally specifically get into the topic of Sue very much, but I'm much more concerned with dealing with how do students approach ethical and moral issues. And I have to be very, very careful when I'm doing this about not telling the students what's right versus what's wrong. Mm. I'm much more concerned with giving them the information or the skills that they need to make this decision themselves, right? I don't want to be up there pontificating from my ivory tower, quote unquote, about what is right and what is wrong. I simply want to give the students the tools to accurately make that decision for themselves.
Okay. I want to thank you very much, Darren, for coming on the program today and sharing this topic with us and our listeners. And you can learn more next Tuesday at the Hay Camp Brewing Company in downtown Rapid City at the Steam Cafe. It starts at 6 o'clock Mountain Time. Darren Paniak, thank you so much for being on the program today. I appreciate it.
Oh, this was great. Thank you for having me.